Welcome back to Deep Thoughts, ladies and gentlemen. Today is a request, and what's interesting is a couple of you have requested it in the last month or so. So this is for you. Now, the request came in to really focus on JFK, and I am going to use a book that I own, which I cannot find in my house. I don't know where the hell it went. I loaned it to a friend. He gave it back to me. Then he rented a room for a little while, and then he left. And I know he didn't take it with him, so I don't know where the hell the book is. But the book is a brilliant, mind-blowing, factual documentary, I would say, of this subject matter. And the book is called The Serial Killers of Lincoln, JFK, RFK, and MLK. They don't talk about Malcolm X, but we're going to throw him in there as well. But I'm calling this Killing Our Heroes. So there's one fascination of who killed these people on any one particular day, who did the shooting, who did this. I'm going to tell you, we'll talk about John Wilkes Booth. We'll talk about Lee Harvey Oswald, Sirhan Sirhan. I had to look up the guy's name, James Earl Ray, who's blamed for killing MLK. No one was specifically identified with the death of Malcolm X. But in this book, which I recommend everyone get a copy of, because it will be, you know, contraband if they ever get control, it will give you the most exhaustive detail about how they carried out Lincoln's death, including newspapers that were printed in Europe that were freaking out with his printing of the greenback, a bunch of personal letters that were written between men talking about how they could get John Wilkes Booth out of the country and then put up in this island off the coast of England. It gives you an exhaustive background detail of all the gunmen that were hired to kill JFK specifically. And I'm going to throw in some other things that I have heard over the years. We're going to talk about MK Ultra and Sirhan Sirhan, who I believe is still alive. James Earl Ray is now, I think, dead. He was falsely accused of killing MLK. And the interesting thing about that is his family figured it out and said, you know what, let this guy go. He didn't kill our father. We're aware of the bigger game here. Now, there are plenty of other people that have been assassinated in this world. There's been attempts on, you know, President Jackson's life because he was up against the bankers and a guy pulled out a Derringer two different occasions and tried to shoot him. The Derringers failed. Either it was two times or I know that at the funeral of his buddy, this guy showed up and it's pouring rain and he tries to shoot a, you know, a flint Derringer. And of course it didn't work because it was wet. And then he had another one in his pocket and he pulled it out and tried to do it again. Didn't work. And then as the story goes, Jackson took out his gloves and smacked him in the face. I mean, wow. what reserve that man had. But before we go into any details whatsoever, I think it's important to pull back from the specifics of who did it and how they did it. And remember that these are events that are orchestrated at the tippy top of the pyramid to get rid of individuals that would interfere with the flow of control. And perhaps, and the control is, I should say this, it's not a perhaps, and the control is actually a stream of various mechanisms. Now, you all know this, but I want you to piece it together in your brain so that you ascend above these old events that you can't change by going back in time in your mind and get to what could happen today. Because we have right now in the United States of America, a guy they want dead. And they've shown you several times that they want him dead. They're now orchestrating this narrative that it's okay from the left to assassinate the president, to discuss and reenact and enact killing the president. You know, Kathy Griffin, that piece of shit, man, she does this mock cutting off the head of the president. Not just that. It wasn't goofy. They covered it in blood. And what could this woman have thought she was doing? It just shows you the super low IQ of what's going on. And what won't you do for money? It wasn't funny. His 11-year-old son at the time saw it on TV. It was horrified, thought it actually occurred. I mean, you know, you're 11. And if you're not indoctrinated like the 11-year-olds of today to watch, you know, Walking Dead and all these other, you know, gory movies, this might be the very first time you see anything that repulsive, that horrific in your life, and it's your father's head. And even though it wasn't identical, it was pretty damn close. I mean, just take away on that particular event. I just want to dwell on that for 1 second. Take away the fact that it was a president and just try to replace it with anyone. Even if it was Jeffrey Epstein's head and we had all this news about him actually revealed of all the things that he did to small girls up, we'd all feel like that's maybe what he deserves, but you wouldn't show it on national television or some, you know, some soapy rag like TMZ.com for a laugh. Maybe it's embedded in a movie. Maybe it's embedded in a specific mature television show, but it's not out there for the press to see and take a picture of and distribute all over the world. It was disrespectful to our president. And it's, I mean, imagine doing that in England. Imagine what would have happened to any citizen in England had they held up a mock face, head of the Queen of England, covered in blood, you know, asleep as if it had its head chopped off, of an acting queen. They would have rolled, Scotland Yard would have rolled in that person's house, and if they survived the arresting situation, they would have spent their life in prison forever. And our president just goes, whatever. Okay, Mr. Trump, when they try to kill you, you've let all this shit go. You've let it all go. Secret Service, you let it all go. You let these people do this shit without ever being visited. So don't be surprised. You are creating the narrative to make this happen. And that's my caution to that camp. It's just stupid. It's just stupid. Get on the ball. It's a felony. Engage. And I don't want some tap on the hand, man. You're going to spend some time in prison. You can think about this. Maybe you get solitary confinement. You threatened to kill the biggest commander in chief in the whole country. And I mean, you don't have to like the guy. I would not have supported that with any of the presidents. I can't stand any of them. Bill Clinton, who I think is a complete serial rapist. That's my belief based on him being on the Epstein plane over 27 times, leaving behind the Secret Service 6 times. Yeah, I think he was engaging in underage sex. I don't know if it was 11-year-olds or 17-year-olds or whatever. I still would not support anyone doing that in public. I may not even support it in any way, shape, or form. We have to be Americans and go through our justice system, due process. You have to. Otherwise, we cease to become Americans. And for those of you who see yourself as Europeans with the same qualities, I would assume you'd have a similar feeling, right? The gentlemen that are murdered were heroes. Maybe not to you, but to a very important demographic within the country. That's why they're all killed. Now, I might throw in there Jimi Hendrix, Janis Joplin, and Jim Morrison. You might throw Cobain in there. In fact, let's just do them first because it's built up to the big boys. Now, there's a bit of a correlation with RFK and the murder of those first three in the 60s and 70s. Now, they may or may not be gigantic conspiracies. They may not tie back to the pyramid in some cases, but I think they definitely tied back to the narrative that was trying to be installed in the United States of America, which is war is good. But now I'm going to piece together, and you've heard me say this a couple times, but I haven't heard this ever mentioned anywhere else in the world. But if you just watch History Channel specials, okay, of all things where they were willing to tell you what actually occurred, no one ever makes the connection at the end. And then the connection after that, and the connection after that. The sell of drugs in the world has always been a gigantic moneymaker. If you study the opioid infection of Europe into China, It is like a 350-year unbelievable thing that they were trying to get every single person in China hooked on opioids and then provide it. I grew it anywhere from India to Europe. Then they put it on boats and they shipped it into China. And China was like, oh, this is just a fun little thing you can smoke and it makes you feel good, until they started to realize their society started to deteriorate. And then when they said, we don't want any more of this crap, Britain opened fire on them. Just bombed the living crap out of their coastlines until they signed up again to buy it again. That's why China is very leery of the white man, because we have, not the Americans, but all of Europe, which is our ancestors in a lot of cases, we did this to their people. And so they don't trust us. But by the time it got to the 20th century, the 1900s, we have, in my research, literally the Italian mafia had figured out where to grow various drugs and distribute them. And when the Central Intelligence Agency, all Skull and Bones folks, had figured out that they had liquid cash and they had amazing power because they had liquid cash, they were like, okay, two things have to occur. We have to shut these folks down and we have to take it over, because boy, that's a sweet little setup. And then we're going to amplify it exponentially, way beyond anything a mafioso person has ever done. We're going to personally ship it into areas of the Americas that we want controlled. We want them depressed and repressed and oppressed and suppressed. I mean, it's like everything regressed. And they did it, and they succeeded, and they even convinced their own people to sell it to themselves, to become users as well as, you know, sellers. But if you study mainstream history, what you will learn is from 1949 to 1959, the intelligence agencies, probably both the FBI and the CIA, had scoured the world to find out where this stuff was coming from and who was involved. So by 1959, they've got it all. They know the names of all the key players. They know the supply routes. They know the locations in the world where the stuff is being grown. They're not just trying to shut it down. They're trying to figure out how to take it over. Now, we're going to walk past JFK's death for 1 second, because this happened while JFK was alive. They handed over this giant list of names by the time JFK got into office, and gave it to his brother and said, you're going to be the one to lead the takedown of all these folks. Okay, so we know that the JFKs, the Kennedy family, had used their prohibition mob connections to help them win the election, which really angered Lyndon B. Johnson, who wanted to be president, who never thought for a second he would be the choice as president. JFK was to be his vice president. That's what happened in his mind. But we'll put a pause on him as well. So when all this was shut down, it appears to me that this Central Intelligence Agency said, well, okay, we're going to sell drugs, but we don't want the kind that are going to destroy society. We just want, you know, maybe some lazy fun drugs, something that's just really addictive, and we're going to sell it. Well, unfortunately for them, the two drugs that they really picked to push forward was marijuana and LSD. Well, marijuana was actually fairly easily grown in the United States, and so a lot of people would just grow a little bit, dry it out, smoke it. It was all brown weed at the time. And then LSD, well, a bunch of people figured out how to make it because it was invented in the 30s. And so the recipe had been sitting around. Okay. And if you doubt any of this, go look at there's not much on the proliferation of the, you know, wacky tobacco, the THC, but there are plenty of videos now released from the 50s and 60s where housewives and kids were all put on LSD and asked to describe what they were seeing. Now, you may think that's just terrific, but you have to understand LSD does nothing to your body at all, destructive at all. The rumors that it stores itself in your fat cells, little reality check on that. you would have to be massively obese, and you would have had to have consumed a tremendous amount of LSD in your lifetime. And then I'm assuming that very quickly after that, you would have to have quickly lost a tremendous amount of weight, where you're burning all these fat cells and maybe there's a little bit stored in there. I think that's mainly BS, okay? But what did it do? When JFK was assassinated, Lyndon B. Johnson starts the Vietnam War almost instantaneously with two events that never occurred, the Gulf of Tonkin events, which is a fake story about how the Viet Cong Navy attacked our Navy, and therefore we had a reason to go into war. His reason for starting that war was a reward system to the bankers for allowing him to kill his running, well, his partner, JFK, so he could become president. We'll come back to all that. Don't worry. But now something weird happened. These agents apparently never took the drug themselves and figured out that, wow, LSD makes you see God. Makes you see love, makes you see the universe, makes you understand how absolutely pointless hurting another human being is. As a matter of fact, it so heightened everyone's senses that people realize that we have been utterly dormant for thousands of years, that the shaman and the priests of yesteryear used to eat equivalent versions of hallucinogenic drugs, and they saw all these geometric patterns that you find in all the churches. And they really became so spiritually enlightened that they could guide humanity where humanity had never been guided before. But now it came down to the people. Okay. So what happens eventually in the 60s? We get the hippie movement, which is very much against the war. And of course, they're demonized to this very day. But they were right. Go ask any Vietnam vet. We shouldn't have been there. You know, spitting on a soldier, well, that's something you should get your ass slapped, you know, unconscious for. I mean, that's a total lack of perspective. A soldier's just doing what they're told to do. They're trying to do what's right, and they've been indoctrinated. Don't blame them for being innocent and naive and not even a good way and just trying to be a good person and defend freedom and all that kind of stuff, right? So, heroin was in full production in 49, but we knew it was pretty intense stuff. It could ruin your entire life. You could OD on it. I guess it stops your heart, is what I've been told. If you take too much of it, it just relaxes you out of your heartbeat. Okay. So LSD is no longer pushed around by the intelligence agencies, but it's picked up by, you know, the Grateful Dead drummer's wife. It's picked up by a bunch of guys who know how to make it. It's all over the place. And so heroin starts entering the game in the mid-60s to start kind of maybe curtailing some of this lack of control. Because they're trying to make everyone get behind this war, which is such an asinine idea. You know, it's like, again, I don't believe in Satan necessarily, but it's like, imagine a whole society that's for war. I mean, what team are you on? Man, you're not on humanity's team, right? Now, truly defending yourself is a totally different thing, but I don't think America's had to truly defend itself since the War of 1812, which is what I consider the last real year of the Revolutionary War. So we get these influencers, right? We get Jimi Hendrix, who's just pulling people's minds apart. You know, he's like, get in there and look around, man. It's in there. You know, love. Don't kill. His national anthem solo, by the way, I never got until I get probably in my 30s. And if any of you have ever heard it at Woodstock, his national anthem solo, he starts playing the national anthem, but then he goes absolutely nuts. And it's this horrific, well, it's beautiful, but I mean, it's this horrific, like negative key, strange, garbly goop. And then he comes back to the national anthem, and then he plays it for a little while, and then he goes back out into crazy, and then he comes back and plays it. That was, as far as I know, extremely intentional. What he was trying to say is, this is what America's turned into. Here we are, as I'm playing the national anthem correctly, that's you. But if you go look at Vietnam War, it's the craziness. And he comes back and says, this is who we are, but this is the craziness. it's the most masterful fucking moment in musical history, in my opinion. I mean, it was like kaboom. And then he was on the Dick Cavett show and he kind of walked around what he did, because he was like, I don't want to debate this, man. If you get it, you get it. If you don't, you don't. Talk about a gentle soul that guy was, man. Watch every interview with Hendrix. Listen to everyone talk about what he was like as a human being. He was a calm, beautiful soul. He died at 27 years old, but I mean, he died at 27 going on 200. He dies in a motel in England. He dies in a motel with an undigested bottle of wine in his stomach, which is a very famous way that mobsters, loan sharks especially, kill people who didn't pay their debts. May have been legit. He supposedly owned 5 loan sharks, a ton of money. He borrowed for drugs and his lifestyle. But he had 74 or so pending, you know, record contracts at the time. So he knew he had the money coming in. He just needed to, you know, float himself properly. And he got a little over the barrel, as you might say. Of course, there's a bunch of controversy about whether or not his girlfriend was there when he died or whether or not she found him. I think she lied that she was there. And then she had to straighten out her story and say, well, I found him. Undigested wine is how they do it. They shove a bottle down your throat and somehow it drains into your stomach and you basically, I guess, suffocate. I don't think it's a toxic shock death, because it's undigested. Very shortly after that, we lose Janis Joplin to a massive heroin overdose. And then very quickly after that, I believe it's in that order, Jim Morrison dies of another massive overdose. But you're talking about Janis Joplin, who was definitely a girl who struggled. She seemed to keep her demons alive, but it helped her music. Her music, her voice is like no one else's voice. I mean, my God, this woman... There's, you know, Tina Turner was very similar to her, but Tina was interested in repairing her life and becoming positive, whereas Janis just couldn't escape it, in my opinion. But she was very young. She was only 27. It takes time to get through major things. But she wanted to be the pretty girl, but she wasn't the pretty girl. She wanted to be the popular girl, but she wasn't the popular. She says this in her interviews. Her lyrics also say it. Jim Morrison, well, his band members described him the best. They said, I think he was a Greek god that just came down to visit one more time. I wasn't a huge Doors fan. But now that I have grown up and I study his music, and again, he dies at 27, and you're like, oh my God, you did all that music before you were 27, and it's profound, some of it, you know? So my hat's off to all three of them. But 3 influencers were taken out of the world because they were not into war, man. But the hippie movement just strengthens, because now they have 3 martyrs. Kinda. You're living for their message now. These amazing people. So the CIA is going, shit, we got to have another event. Something that will totally clean up this hippie movement. And that's where you get the Charles Manson murders. You know, who knows who Charles Manson was? You read about his history as a kid, and it's like, again, who knows what's true? Who knows what's not? The second he gets arrested, he didn't kill anybody. Everyone else got arrested. Like, what if one of them got let go and the other one died in prison or something? Anyway, he gets, you know, framed for the whole thing. And, you know, hey, it's one of these things. If someone told you to go kill somebody and you did, and they didn't give you money for it, they're just shooting their mouth off. But to get arrested for it, it's a little strange, especially a life sentence. It's a little strange. But the second the guy gets into the prison system, they keep him so drugged out of his mind. And especially, you know, what they do is they let him have it. They let him smuggle it in. They don't stop the drugs. They make sure someone has it, a guard or an inmate gets it from a guard or whatever, however they're smuggling in. He always gets plenty. And he always gets a big dose before all of his interviews. So he seems like he is nuts. But what's weird about it is, if you have the guts to watch his interviews, which are not easy to watch, but you want to go all the way back to the very beginning and all the way back up to when he died, he says some amazingly profound things. If you especially know what we know about the world now, when you're awakened, he was totally awake. Now, should have anyone have died? Of course not. And, you know, because assholes out there like to cross wires. Well, you're saying that all those people should have died. And it's just, yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying. None of the, you know, the regulars, but some of the newcomers might throw that out there. So that's not what I'm saying. By the way, go see Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Man, is that got an amazing ending to it. Woof. It's Brad Pitt's best acting, in my opinion. But as soon as the Manson murders happen, the hippie movement is dead. Everyone's going to the Haight-Ashbury Street in San Francisco to retire. Who wants to hang on to that movement? A few of them end up in Santa Cruz, but worldwide, it's over. It's over, man. You can't be associated with these crazy druggies who will go into a house and kill people. And quite frankly, however that occurred, it was that group of people that went off and did that. Maybe that would have happened more. Who knows, right? I find it mind-blowing that it ever happened, because the kids of that era were very sweet. I mean, shit, even after that happened, you know, the 70s, you meet everyone from 75 to 80. Everyone's goofy, man. And the 80s were goofy. You know, so I don't know where this killer gene came from, but it showed up. It was bad news, man. So all of these assassinations are to return control back to the quote-unquote ruling class. So let's go back to Lincoln. Lincoln. Well, what's happened to Lincoln in the last 10 years? Well, they made some movies about him. Him as a vampire killer, that was my favorite. Probably the most truthful out of all the movies they've made. But the bankers, when you piss them off, not only do they kill you, but they go after your legacy and they destroy you. And maybe they bring out some stuff that's truthful about your legacy or your personal life that is true. And most of the time, they just create it from scratch. You've heard most likely that Lincoln's wife was a nutbag, right? Maybe. But they would love to take a crap on his wife, because that makes him look stupid dating a crazy woman. Even if she was mentally ill at some point, it would have been their incredible bond of love that kept them together. But, you know, who knows? So what does Lincoln have to deal with? He's an eccentric human being, if there ever was an eccentric human being. What is he, 6'5"? Lanky? He looks different than all of the other humans on this planet. I mean, seriously, there's some people that can impersonate him pretty well with makeup and beards and all that kind of stuff. But once you take it all off, they don't look anything like Lincoln. Lincoln's like, he's special, smart. He's articulate. But on his watch, you know, the Democratic Party had just formed about 20 years earlier. They're running the South. They are created by Europe to overthrow our country. Boy, are they in full effect today. You know, they were racist as hell. They created this Confederate army. And they challenged the North, Yankees. Now, I'm not saying any individual within those parties, like your uncle or your great-great-great uncle, your great-great-grandfather, anything like that, that those are bad people. Not saying that at all. We never know what the hell's going on until after it's occurred. That's something you have to remember, too. So a lot of folks will do horrible things and then wake up out of it and go, what the hell was I thinking? Yeah, it's because everyone you live next to drank the same Kool-Aid, and so it was easy to get groupthink going. And groupthink is a super powerful, real mental thing. That's why the mob rules, right? You get people in mobs and they'll just do things they would never do ever. And then as soon as they wake up the next day and sober up, whether it be by alcohol or straight up just mental indoctrination, they're ashamed and they'll kill themselves. I mean, it's a very powerful drug. But what did the South want and what did the North want? And I've heard all of the arguments against what I'm about to say. So please be aware, I've heard these arguments. I don't buy it. The South relied on slavery to run plantations owned by very rich European people who then would ship profits back to their European investors. Oh, sure, they were very rich as well. And probably after a few years, they were capable of sustaining themselves without taking outside investment. But they didn't buy all that land by themselves, and they didn't have, you know, all these crops staying in America. Some of it was put on ships and sent back to Europe. and other places in the local region, right? So there's a difference in doctrine. The North had started to abolish slavery. It wasn't legally abolished, but it was starting to happen. The slaves of the North would dress in dresses and tuxedos and live in a house, and they didn't necessarily go outside and plow a field, because I can tell you by the 1630s, when my first family members came over, they went straight into plantations. In fact, that continued to occur all the way up into the 1800s with a different branch of my family. So if there were blacks working in the North, they were probably working beside whites as well, who were paying off their debt that they accrued by getting a free ride, technically, over the ocean to this new promised land. But then they had a debt so gigantic, and they're, you know, what, 95 cents on the dollar, let's just say percentage-wise, went back to the plantation, and 5 cents goes to their principal debt, so they're going to be stuck on that plantation their whole life. All my family members had to escape in the night to get free. And it was just a common thing. New ones are coming off the boat, so whatever. They knew they got their money's worth, so no one chased them down. So here's Lincoln. He gets slammed with the war. And wars aren't easy to fight, you know? These are civil wars, man. Civil wars are huge. I mean, just look at the death toll of the Civil War. It is massive. Some of the massacres that we orchestrated against each other are breathtakingly mind-blowing in terms of the fatalities and the types of injuries. I mean, shooting a cannon into a crowd of people, you have a ball made of steel traveling, you know, just under the speed of sound coming right at you. It's just tearing people to pieces. I mean, and they just march right into it, man. The balls on these dudes, man. The conviction to die for what they believed in. I mean, these snowflakes and these AOCs and these Omars that are trying to literally infiltrate our country and destroy it from the inside. The unbelievable cowardice they have, where you have men who watch their buddy just disintegrate when a cannonball hits them, and they're still going to fight for the Constitution of the United States and the Republic, which is these inalienable rights you get because you're alive. So the Civil War got expensive. Lincoln does what everybody does. He asks his administration, well, what do we do if we need more money? They said, well, the only place we can really go is Europe. That's the way we always go. We borrow money from rich people in Europe, and then we take a note, a bond, towards that debt. It's got a big interest rate on it, and then we fight our war. And when it's over, we spend decades paying off that debt. This book, I believe, claimed that, if it's not the book, it's some other thing I read, but that the Rothschilds were right there waiting to fund it, because of course they're going to fund both sides. That's what they've always done since Amschel, or whatever the hell his name is, started doing his thing. They told Lincoln, we'll loan you the money. Your interest rate's going to be 3,600%. Can you imagine that? $1 multiplied times 3,600. So it's $3,600 back for every dollar we loan you. And of course, Lincoln's like, are you kidding me? I don't think I'm going to pay that. Let's try to talk this out. And of course, they're like, nope, that's it. We run the world. You have no choice. And if you don't behave, we're going to go ahead and fund the South at a lower percentage, and you're going to lose. So he's like, okay, all right. Nice talking to you. He goes and says, look, what stops us from printing our own money? He said, nothing. We just haven't done it before. Well, we haven't done it in a long time since Hamilton sold us out. All right. So he starts printing what is called the greenback. Why was it called the greenback? Well, as I understand it, predominantly the backside of the money was extremely green because it had one ink that was green. And he starts printing legal tender that wasn't connected to the cartel of royalty and banking cartel families in Europe, right? Habsburgs, your Rothschilds, or two non-royal families that own the royal families, and there's many more where that comes from. And he ends up winning this war. But now at the same time, what's going on, as soon as he starts that and starts distributing those funds, the word gets back to the European banking cartel. They start writing articles about him, I guess in rags between the two factions, right? They write little newsletters and stuff to each other to kind of communicate because there's no internet. They can't just be everywhere in Europe. And these letters were recovered and put in this book. And it essentially said that if the European citizens ever get wind of what Lincoln's doing, we're done. Because they're going to demand that we print their own money in Germany and France and England and Spain and all these places, Italy. And no one's going to be taking our fake money with all this crazy compound interest / debt. And so they decided there's something that needs to be done about this Lincoln dude. Well, in comes this soon to be washed up actor, John Wilkes Booth. Yeah, he's an actor. You know, today we might think, oh, he's probably a Brad Pitt. I mean, he would never do something like that. There's no contesting that he did it. It's just, how did he do it? And what happened to him afterwards? Well, they start writing letters between each other. All these cartel folks that are embedded in the United States of America, as well as some over in England. And one of the guys wrote a letter saying, well, I can get him from the theater to the coast. One dude writes a letter and says, I can get him from the coast to England. One guy says, if you can get him to England, I can put him up on this estate on this island just outside of England where he can just live the rest of his life. Now, I've heard stories. Okay. Who can confirm anything, right? But I've heard stories that he continued writing letters back to his family in America clear up into his 70s. So the dude supposedly confirmed as being fully alive. But what's the night where he gets shot in this theater? Lincoln's watching a play. They obviously know where he is. The Secret Service wasn't quite what it is today, and so he's up there capable of being compromised. And of course, John Wilkes Booth, being an actor, could play on his credentials to say, I just want to meet the president. I'm an actor. This is my place, you know. And so they may have not been able to stop him no matter what they did, but he cowardly walks up behind Lincoln and shoots him in the back of the head, jumps out of the balcony, lands on the stage, supposedly sprains his ankle. Basically, people said they saw him take a hit and go, oof, and then limp out of the back of the theater where a carriage is waiting for him, who then starts the plan. Get him to the coast. Coast to England. England to this island. I mean, he was probably on a boat for, you know, what, 3 weeks or so? Whatever long it takes to get over there at the time. And so he was in for a major ride. But then he's getting rewarded beyond his wildest dreams. But now history says that he retreated into a barn. And instead of killing the guy or arresting the guy, I mean, think about it. You don't have like Uzis with, you know, 120 round clips and, you know, all this other stuff. So they could have worn him down out of his ammunition in 2 seconds and gone in there and captured the guy. But instead of doing that, to find out who perhaps may have hired him, why he did it, they set the barn on fire and he dies of smoke inhalation. That seems to be a very popular lie, like Benghazi. The ambassador did not die, as the movie said, inside the embassy. He was dragged out into the streets, hooked to a motorcycle, mutilated, and eventually dies in the streets. That movie about Benghazi is a complete revisionistic history, disrespectful reenactment of what this guy actually went through. So they pull this body out of the barn. They say that's John Wilkes Booth. Well, almost nobody knows who the guy is. Because he's an actor, well, no one can really vouch for what he really looks like, except for his best friend. Because actors wear makeup, they wear wigs, you know. He could be himself in a play. He could be somebody else in a play. His best friend attends his funeral, which is an open casket funeral. He is then questioned by the press. What did you think about seeing your friend? not assuming that he's going to answer it a completely different way. But his friend said, I don't know who that is in that casket, but that's not my friend John Wilkes Booth. And he said, what are you talking about? He said, well, John Wilkes Booth had the greatest head of hair ever. Dude's 25 years old. This guy said, well, my friend has black hair and more of it than anyone I've ever met. And the guy in that casket has receding hair, and it's obviously red, and it's been dyed with stage makeup dye, hair dye. That's not him. But, you know, who's going to print it? The printing press is, you know, it's getting yellow, but they're all over this anyway. They're all over this kill because they know they did it. And there goes Lincoln. Poof. Now, for those of you who aren't familiar with American coins, something very telling about the American coins, because Lincoln's on the penny. The lowest denomination of money we have, which I believe in England is called a P, he's on the copper penny, and he is facing the opposite direction of all the other coins, which are nickel and silver at the time. Their gesture with putting him on the penny was that he turned his back on the bankers. And so they made him face away from the rest of the, you know, whatever, honorable people that were going along with the bankers. Now, again, the situation where these coins are forged of the other presidents was probably during a more integral part of American history. But by the time he died, you got some infiltrators. I can't remember if he's facing away on the $5 bill. We should look that up. But that was a banker move. You are not to mess with the bankers. So now let's fast forward. Next up would be John F. Kennedy. I think he's born, he was killed in what, November 26th, 63, somewhere in that range. So the JFK assassination is so dense and so messy that there, even if we had the Deep Thoughts Radio College, and we tried to assemble all of our factoids together, all the rumors and what have you, the room, the war room that we would assemble, which let's say we had a large conference room, 30 feet by 15 feet, all the walls are covered with all the Polaroids and the evidence and all the newspapers, the Magruder footage, all that stuff. It would be the messiest room ever. And that would be us trying to get to the truth of the matter. Now, the fact that he was assassinated by our people, not this Lee Harvey Oswald leaning out of a book depository window shooting three times, is a given fact. One of my friends in England, who's probably in his early 60s at this point, said that when he was taught about this in school in England, it was straight up our Central Intelligence Agency of America killed the President of the United States. They just flat out said it. Okay. But now why? And is that really the end of the contribution list? By no means. I think that we have Lyndon B. Johnson, who I will refer to from this point forward as LBJ, was unfortunately in an affair against his wife with a woman in Texas who, after her son was killed by his estate for going and saying his illegitimate son, when his illegitimate son said, I'm going to prove that I am the son of LBJ and I want my cut from the estate, he died very quickly from a drug overdose, I believe. I think it's drug overdose. I don't think he was murdered quite outright, but he was a drug addict anyway, so it was real easy to pawn this off on him and get him killed. When her son was killed, she sat in her backyard, and you can see this on YouTube, I think, and she gave her basically informal affidavit as what happened around the time of JFK's death. She said the night before the death, she went to a Elks Lodge, and there were a bunch of men in a room. Now, she claimed to have seen J. Edgar Hoover in the room, which is very interesting. LBJ's in there. And she said that she was sitting, she wasn't allowed to go in because no women were allowed in. She's sitting out in the lobby. She said the room got extremely heated, yelling and shouting, definitely heard LBJ's voice over everyone else's voice, that it's over. He pops out the door, grabs her, and then she says, is everything okay? And he said, quote, that'll be the last time that son of a bitch embarrasses me, end quote, meaning JFK. Embarrassment? What's he talking about? Well, he was supposed to be president, but he became vice president instead. Okay. The book documents an event in Louisiana, New Orleans, where just outside of the FBI headquarters there, there was a motel, hotel, whatever, and there was a room where this woman, who was an assassin for, I guess, our government, State Department, whatever, was asked to come to this room. She claims that she went into the room. There was three other people there, and she claims that she saw Lee Harvey Oswald in the room. Everyone was taking a pile of cash to get on the shooting team against JFK. The amount of money was $5,000 a piece in cash, and this other dude's handing it out. Fourth guy. They offered her the $5,000, but she said, due to a previous engagement by the government, she was able to decline being on the team because she wasn't going to be in Dallas at the time because she was going to be on assignment. So she managed to not be on the killing team, but not kill herself for knowing this was going to occur because of a previous engagement. Now, let's rewind to Lee Harvey Oswald for 1 second before we go any deeper in this. I saw a documentary, I believe it was Alex Jones' first posted video on his website way back in the day, when video finally got to the point you could actually download something of any length, and I think this was about 45 minutes long. I do not believe this is still up there. It's a kooky video. Whoever edited this together was using obviously antiquated editing stuff, wasn't an artist themselves, but boy, did they put together some stuff, man. It has always rung with me and I can't shake it. And it also covered, I believe, the RFK murders as well, but we'll pull back and delay that until we get to that guy. But there is a entire conspiracy story, which is fairly believable, that Lee Harvey Oswald was a mole from the FBI into the CIA, but it wasn't going to ever be a direct path. He couldn't just go and apply at the CIA, being J. Edgar Hoover's mole, and spy on them. Mainly because of the Cuban crisis where, you know, again, Castro, just so you know the history, came to the State Department and said, will you help me take over Cuba? And we said, sure. On one condition, that once you take it over, you're our asset and you'll do what we say. And we have a big role in Cuba's development, especially all your resources that you have, sugarcane, tobacco, whatever. So he gets all this assistance, which is never discussed. And this comes from the ambassador to Cuba from 1958 to 1961 or something. He sat in a living room for 25 minutes and gave this testimony. But as soon as Castro wins, he flips the bird to the State Department, and that's why the embargo happened against Cuba, and that's why Castro was always considered evil, and that's why the Castro family is so ostracized to this day. They don't forget when you screw them. But the CIA was running this invasion to go back and get what, you know, they were like, okay, you're going to play that ball. All right, we're going to infiltrate you and take you over. So the CIA was getting involved in training Cuban dissidents in the states here, preparing them to take over Cuba. Kennedy didn't want that to occur. I don't think Kennedy cared. I think Kennedy was like, whatever, it's a little island. Yeah. We'll talk to them once this Russian missile crisis ends. And so it is believed, perhaps, maybe, that JFK, obviously meeting with Hoover, who had more power than God at the time, he said, I need you to shut down these camps. He says, man, I can't get in. I can't even find out where they are. He says, we'll find someone who can. So you have this decorated Marine, Lee Harvey Oswald, who suddenly defects to Russia. He's on the Russian, you know, front page of the paper over there defecting. pictures with him and all the Russians. Supposedly, you know, he defected and brought over plans for like the U-2 airplane or something. But regardless, he is a complete and utter traitor to America. And then miraculously, this dude moves back to the United States and doesn't get caught by anyone. I guess he lives outside Dallas. He's always in Louisiana, New Orleans, in that same FBI headquarters, taking whatever, meetings. That was in that JFK movie that Oliver Stone put out. The assertion is that he then showed his disdain for JFK, and verbally, of course, and then said, I am willing to do anything to get rid of JFK. And so they put him in these training camps to help out because he's a decorated sniper. And then he would phone back to Hoover and say, this is where the camp is. And Hoover would go in and shut the camp down. And because the CIA figured this out, they made sure that J. Edgar Hoover's mole was blamed for the whole thing, which might be why George Herbert Walker Bush finds himself on the steps of the book depository and why he used Ford's funeral and eulogy to say, we shouldn't believe in outrageous conspiracy theories about the death of JFK. I mean, talk about a conscience he couldn't get rid of, right? He held that for nearly 40 years, 50 years almost, right? But now George Herbert Walker Bush is involved too. But how is he involved? Well, this documentary clearly points out the fact that as soon as George Herbert Walker Bush, when he crashed two planes during World War II, doesn't die, comes back to the States, his father, who's a skull and bones, he's a skull and bones, and his sons are skull and bones. His father had a guy that gifted the family an oil company in the Gulf of Mexico. It was called Zapata Oil, which stands for Bush, I believe in Spanish. And so he's trying to run this company, and it has boats. It has three boats, at least. The Barbara 1, the Barbara 2, and the Barbara 3. Not sure what the make and model is, but I think the third one was pretty large. When the Bay of Pigs occurs, you have a situation where the CIA had finally trained all these folks, don't know how many. They were put on a Barbara 3 boat, waiting for the approval from the president to authorize this invasion of Cuba. But JFK won't do it. And so that ambassador who did his little speech but he did this video in his living room. He said he was at the third floor of the State Department when the call came in, we're going to Plan B. And Plan B was to kill every single one of these people on purpose to embarrass the President of the United States. According to this guy who made this video, the Barbara 3 boat was used to drop them off in the Bay of Pigs. A phone call is made to Castro, telling them that this is occurring. And so he just ran a bunch of planes over and bombed them, killed every single one of them. Of course, they're jumping out in 3 foot deep mud, so they can't move the second they get out. It was a total human slaughter to embarrass the president. Okay, so now you've got the State Department angry at JFK. You've got the intelligence agencies angry at JFK. Now, apparently, George Herbert Walker Bush, again, jumps out of the military, goes into this private oil thing. He said he did absolutely no military service whatsoever until he became vice president under Reagan. Except he ran the CIA out of thin air in 1974. Ooh, that's a little weird, isn't it? Sort of an important operation, and the only people allowed to run it back in those days were Skull and Bones graduates, right? Alumni. And he's there to watch the murder happen. There's a photograph of him on the book depository steps. If nothing else, he has one of the most unique shaped skulls on planet Earth. He was a very tall man, and the guy in this picture matches all of the facial recognition you would ever need to identify him. Richard Nixon. Richard Nixon hated the pretty boy JFK. If you go look at some of the oldest pictures of the Bohemian Grove, the little weird group that gets together in Northern California, you will have a picture of Kennedy. Or sorry, excuse me. You will have a picture of Ronald Reagan William Tell, or Teller, the guy who invented the H-bomb, and Nixon all sitting at a picnic table in suits. Well, Nixon was definitely a bad guy. He's in Dallas as well to watch the killing. I believe he flew to Oklahoma City or something. And then he was hit by the press. Hey, were you in Dallas? And he said no initially. And eventually they proved he was there. And then, you know, whatever, just fizzles out. So he's there as well. But who did the killing? Well, they said that the mob wanted to kill Kennedy because, well, RFK was shutting him down left and right. Now, whether or not this is the same mob that got him into office, I would contest it's not the same division of mob bosses. Now, whether or not they have an alliance on the back end and would help, it doesn't really matter. I don't think any mob hitmen participated in this at all. Maybe I'm wrong. We don't know how many shooters there were. I think this book asserts that the minimum amount of forensics evidence from bullets ricocheting off curbs, through windshields, through chrome molding, plus the shots that hit Kennedy, get the number up to about 12 confirmed. But that the rumor in the background was that there was up to 27 people hired to do the job. Now, whether or not people get to take their shot or not is contested. You know, you might be an ancillary shot that happens way down the street and you never get your shot. I think the driver of the car was the true last resort killer. And they just knew they were going to kill everybody in the area, round them all up. If you saw anything, you were dead. There was a Cuban man we're going to talk about who held up a black umbrella, but we're not quite there yet. What else was Kennedy up to? Well, once he saw the Central Intelligence Agency muscling him for this Cuban invasion and then pulling stunts like the Bay of Pigs, he just immediately said, well, they have to be shut down, which is why he gave his incredible speech about secret societies, which I'm sure all of you have heard, but if you haven't heard it, it will blow your mind. And you know what? It's actually good to hear it about every quarter of a year, every 3 months, because the more you consider yourself awake, this dude was over the target, man. He knew everything. His articulation about their powers was more accurate than I think anyone in the modern age has ever described, including myself. And he did it in one little speech, and not in five. Well, let's just say I have 600 hours worth of footage. It's not, none of it totals up as beautiful as his speech. So you have an intelligence agency that wants him gone because they're threatening his very, he's threatening their very power structure, and they're architects of this country because they're here to enforce banker rule, because the Skull and Bones, when formed, I believe in 1834, said that they're going to take over America by all financial means necessary. And that's exactly what they did with the 16th Amendment that was falsely ratified in 1913. You remember, there's at least three states that said that they were held at gunpoint on Christmas Eve or whenever it was to ratify this bill. Kentucky, Pennsylvania, and I believe Oklahoma. All said, especially Pennsylvania, they said, they were held at gunpoint to sign this thing, to vote for it. And then, of course, Taft, the recently outed president, was on a train, caboose train tour with William Hearst, yellow journalism king, and Woodrow Wilson with his moon controller. It's Colonel Moon, I think is what they called him. But they went around telling the world that it was ratified. Isn't this great? You're all about to get taxed to death. Enjoy it, you morons. And just so you know, taxes before the 16th Amendment were corporations, tobacco, and firearms. So luxury items and corporations. That paid all the bills. And so what they did on Jekyll Island was all the bankers got together, rewrote all of the tax code to make sure that the country gave tax exemptions to the corporations and put all the burden on the back of the people, keeping the luxury tax at the same time. But who else wanted JFK dead? More than anyone on planet Earth, LBJ. LBJ was a member of what they call the White Knights, a democratically run Ku Klux Klan in suits. Again, the book called The Last Jihad, written in 1993 by the nephew of the governor, who I believe is Governor Keating of Oklahoma, wrote a book about the federal building in Oklahoma City being bombed by a Tom McVeigh in 1993, and the front of the book is dedicated to the White Knights. Interesting. Well, it just goes deeper and deeper, doesn't it? So I believe that through all of my connections and all the stuff I've ever read, heard, rumored, and then logic applied to it all, LBJ goes to this cartel, probably the intelligence agency, and said, look, I can get him killed in Dallas. And I just need your permission. I don't want you to kill me if I do it. I need your help protecting the press, protecting all the evidence. I'll get the shot through his head. You need to take over everything else. And of course, they said, what's your plan? All right, that looks good. Let's do it. And then the day of infamy occurs. So let's go to the day of. Now, typically, as a matter of protocol, the vice president and the president are not allowed to be in some public event like that at the same exact time, minus campaign rallies and that kind of stuff, or at the White House where there's plenty of protection, because some foreign agency could kill both of them. We would be without our first and second. But on that day, it happened. Now, I have not been able to get a footage of LBJ's car, but I heard he was in a hardtop car while the president's in a convertible. I can't confirm that, but eyewitnesses have a couple things occurring here. Now, we all know the Secret Service were told not to step on the back of the car because they were going to get in the way of the shot. And there's the famous footage of the Secret Service agents jumping off the back quarter panels, which have these little steps, and then waving to the, you know, their commanders, their COs, going, what the hell? We're supposed to be here. This is, you know, this is crazy. Can you imagine how horrible they felt jumping off that car because they were told to, and then the president actually gets killed? Horrific. But what ends up occurring is this car goes into this special street. And if you look at the floor plan or the, you know, the top down view of this city, it's actually part of a triangle, which is a pyramid. You have to use a train track to create one side, I believe. But it's a very Masonic-y little location. Secret Service guys are pulled off. And this dude, who they always call the Cuban, because he was a darker complected guy, is sitting next to a white guy. And he suddenly stands up and puts up a black umbrella. A couple things happen at that point. LBJ is said to have leaned down behind the seat that he was sitting behind with a big giant military walkie-talkie screaming into it. Then all hell breaks loose. The first shot, obviously, that we know of went through the back of JFK's neck, which caused him to lean forward and grab his neck. The shots are going all over the place. The governor of Texas is in the seat in front of him, and he gets shot. But the other shots were a curb behind the car. The windshield took one to the front. The chrome molding over the holds the window in got one from just over the driver's left-hand side. I've seen photos of all this, but boy, is it tough to find the photos today. They have done an amazing job, of course. The major search engine in the world is the biggest deep stater on planet Earth, right? Ushering in censorship and Agenda 21. Now, what does Hollywood say about the conspiracy? Because the next thing that occurs, obviously, is that JFK gets hit in such a way that his head goes back into the left. We get the birth of a theory that most likely wasn't true at all, which is the grassy knoll. Somebody said, you know, some eyewitness, and again, if you're disinfoing, you can create everything. Supposedly an eyewitness says, I saw the smoke coming up from the grassy knoll. Okay. From the position of the person who said they saw the grassy knoll smoke cloud, they would have also seen a human being with a rifle. That's never added to the story. Just this little cartoon idea that was over there. The reason why you have been sold the grassy knoll is because nobody was there. Now, I have read And I'm not even sure where the book concludes. I can't remember. They did name supposedly, I've heard somewhere they named the person behind the grassy knoll, and it was like a French assassin that ended up dying a few years later. Well, I should say 10 years later in South America, as a result of some other thing he was involved in where the shootout got him. Whatever. You wouldn't have missed. You wouldn't have missed if you were even a remote sniper. Because here comes Kennedy, and what is he, 100 yards from you? 100 feet from you? The kill shot is from an 18-year-old kid in a rain drain. Because Dick Gregory is given this Magruder footage to then publish to the press. He wasn't supposed to do it, but he did. But a bunch of frames out of that movie have been edited out. And the people that have seen the original footage said the car stopped for 11 seconds. Now, I've seen some footage. If nothing else, I haven't seen the stop footage. I think Bill Cooper tried to run around with the stop footage. But what you see is obviously the hit shot. It's famous. And the car is moving at the time. So I'm not sure how that stopped 11 frame thing or 11 second thing happened. I don't know. But the car was definitely slowed down, and two things are occurring at the same exact time. One, the 18-year-old kid in the rain drain is lining up his shot. They have now taken the photo, measured the car, where his head was. It's a clean shot. Boom. I have seen personally the photographs of Kennedy having a hole over his right eye and his forehead. I have seen it clear as bell through his skin, and then I've seen the actual mutilated version of his head after the agency got a hold of him, and they created this like jagged cut, like it was almost like a pumpkin mouth or something. It was ridiculous looking. We know a chunk of his head flew away from his head, and that's what Jackie was trying to get. Now, there's a debate whether or not Jackie was going to get the piece or was she trying to get out of the car. Either one, I don't really care. But the piece of his head came out, and it was the size of a grapefruit. This is confirmed by the 9 morticians that saw Kennedy's body before it was stitched back together. They were interviewed on video, and this video shows all 9 of them saying he had a hole in the back of his head this big. They show the palm of their hand, and they reach around the back of their head, all 9 of them. They cut it together like a Brady Bunch intro. So 9 little boxes, and these people all synchronized doing this gesture. So that's guaranteed the way it worked. But they stitched that back on his head because there's a hole right and directly in the center of that piece of his brain, or piece of the back of his skull. They stitched it back on and said that the bullet came from behind by Lee Harvey Oswald, and it blew out the front of his face, and of course that the flapping blew his head back. And of course, JFK, the movie at least, said that's probably horse crap, but they were going for the grassy knoll theory because Oliver Stone does nothing but revise history these days, right? Although JFK is one of the best movies ever made. He also published the fact that I think in, what was it, Malaysia, the newspaper came out that JFK had been assassinated 3 hours before it happened, just like the Building 7 being announced that it fell 20 minutes before it fell by the BBC, where they scratched out the transmission and said, oh, you're having a problem communicating with New York. The building's in the background with the woman saying it already fell. So she had the script early. A smoking gun if you ever needed one, right? So what's this stuff about an 18-year-old kid? Did you ever hear about that? There was a very famous eyewitness who was a deaf guy who had a hearing aid standing up on the railroad tracks looking at Kennedy's car when it happened. He didn't know what was going to happen. He's just there. He's the eyewitness that said the hobos that got off the train cars, which weren't moving, had earpieces on. They're wearing hobo clothes, clean as a whistle, with earpieces. That's where Britain teaches that the Central Intelligence Agency did it. Don't know. But that guy said there was a crawl space from the sewer section down below that came up to the railroad tracks. And this kid comes out covered in crap from his waist down, carrying a rifle bag. He puts it down on the ground and walks off in the opposite direction across the track. It's above the street, just walking off. The hobo, one of the 3 or 4 that came off, grabs the gun, bag and walks to the guy's left. Of course, everyone's disappearing, right? And this whole thing is now in stage two. The kid worked at a gas station. The gas station is a full service gas station where people actually filled up your gas for you while you sat in your car and checked your oil and put a new quart in, because we don't change our oil every 3,600 miles like the ridiculous crap we do today. The kid goes to work. He goes to the restroom. So there's a little building off next to the main building, and he goes in there, and his friends saw him arrive because there's a shift change about to occur and he's late. They said all they could hear, because they kept going up to the door and trying to see if he's okay, because he never came out. All they could hear was the water running. Now, over the airwaves, of course, everyone's finding out JFK has been murdered. And the big statement is, you see something weird, you say something, right? So they called it into the police. A cop car shows up. They get him to come out. They take him away. And no one ever saw that kid ever again. Who knows what happened to him? Maybe died. Maybe they gave him a new identity. If he got the shot, I'm sure the Rothschilds themselves would give him a little house somewhere, right? Then LBJ, who's so excited about being president, he's thought this whole thing through. He's thought it through. He gets on Air Force One. I believe it's one. And he has this Bible swearing in thing on camera. Something that is not required by law for him to take the position. He is automatically the president once the president is declared dead. He's the president. There's no swearing in required. But he wanted that event to occur, and he knows it wasn't going to occur in some public event because it's not necessary. So he created it so that he would have something to put on his wall. So he gets sweared in. Now, a little bit more dimension to LBJ. He was a big, tough dude. Okay, he is like Gene Hackman, probably times two. And if you don't know about Gene Hackman, he's a good, nice actor. But he's a rough, tough dude. Back in the day, he would beat the living crap out of you in a bar just for the hell of it. He was just that guy. He apologized after he grew up, but that's sort of who he was. He needed to be gritty. He needed to have his strength. He needed to prove himself. Well, LBJ was this guy. He was a god in the metropolitan areas of Texas, Dallas. He was a head guy of the White Knights in his area, right? His mistress said that on one occasion they were kissing in her house, and a Mexican maid saw them kiss, and he said, "Uh-oh." And she said, "What?" "Oh, we don't let anybody see us do this." And she said, "Well, don't worry. She doesn't even speak English very well, and she wouldn't say anything." And he goes, "Well, we don't take chances." So LBJ had a Secret Service guy take her home, and she disappeared. They killed her. Most likely. All right. What else goes on? Well, LBJ was known for, like, taking meetings with the bathroom door open while he took a crap. I mean, he's just a different kind of person, right? He immediately greenlights the Vietnam War, like I said. And why is that? Because we're going to borrow a ton of money from those banks and get in debt for this ridiculous war. There was no benefit to Vietnam and us taking it over and North versus South. They'll tell you all those stories, but in retrospect, we all know it's crap. Now, it doesn't mean, okay, for those that want to get into the details, that he didn't pass a couple good things in his lifetime as a president, right? You know, I mean, he's still going to be a president. It's just you don't get in his way. And if you get in his way, he'll kill you. And that's what happened, in my opinion. But now, a hero's dead now. Well, they knew it was going to be tough as a PR blitz to basically completely erase JFK out of the books and treat him like Lincoln. He's been filmed. He's amazing. Now, the same thing we have to think, other thing we have to understand is that, you know, Marilyn Monroe most likely didn't kill herself. Okay. So he's not innocent. You know, JFK is not completely innocent of weird things, right? Whether or not, I mean, you know, Robert, his brother's right there when she dies. I mean, supposedly, so I mean, there's some big fuckery with Marilyn Monroe's death, right? But the next one that got murdered was in February of 1965, I think February 21st, Malcolm X gets killed. Now, for those of you who want to know about Malcolm X's death, you know, you read what Alex Hayes's book, which is what the Malcolm X movie is based on. Now, I'm not a huge Spike Lee fan on a personal level. Never met the guy. He seems pretty agenda 21, whether or not he realizes it or not. Hopefully he wakes up at some point in his lifetime. But, you know, Malcolm X is a bookie as a young man in Harlem, gets arrested, goes to jail, becomes a Muslim, comes out, joins the Elijah Muhammad group, and really tries to become a good man. And he really takes on this heroic position of, we need to wake up and become a strong Black community. And so he was also, because he was a very tough guy, and so some of his tactics were obviously very militant in behavior, without being, you know, no guns or anything, but just, I'm not taking any more of your shit. And by the way, our community is going to dress beautiful women and beautiful men. Men are all going to wear suits, and women are going to wear these, you know, sort of this fascist thing. But, you know, it's probably not every day, but he really wanted to empower his people. Now, when he is murdered, he is giving a speech to his congregation, which had been largely reduced because he was kicked out of the Islamic movement of the Black community from the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, as he would say, because as the book infers, he found out that that guy was sleeping with all the women in his church. And he basically said, wow, this is totally like the Wizard of Oz, man, behind the curtain. You're not who I think you are. And so he rescinded himself out of that group. And I'm not sure if they kicked him out or he pulled himself out, but I don't think morally he could hang on to that. And so his congregation reduced, but he still had followers, and they knew he was going to get bigger again because he's speaking the truth and he's empowering people and they love it. Now, the way that the movie portrays it is that some Black men came into the theater. The famous phrase was, I believe, get your hand out of my pocket. And they just blasted him at the podium. That's how the movie portrays it. I have heard in the last 5 years by someone who was very educated in this, that his body forensics said that the shots came from above, which I believe they call the fleet, way up there in the rafters, that someone was out there just shooting from above. Doesn't really matter. A corrupt faction got rid of this guy, and they thought maybe they had hobbled this rebirth of the Black nation within America. But unfortunately for them, Martin Luther King was just as powerful, if not way more powerful. We should just say he was way more powerful than Malcolm X. He is a reverend / a preacher. He's got a brain the size of a planet. Martin Luther King, as far as I know, never wrote his speeches down. So all those amazing speeches that Martin Luther King gave were off the top of his head, from the heart. He was absolutely non-militant. And you can see that, you know, films about him as well. But here's what's interesting about this book, The Serial Killers of Lincoln, JFK, RFK, and MLK. They get the chronology mixed up in the title. The CIA, and perhaps even the FBI, but I think the book has the transcripts of a Senate hearing with the CIA regarding MLK. In this book is the transcribed, you know, notes of the meeting. And they had to admit to the Senate that they disinfoed the public about him having affairs with women. Horrific. They also had to admit that they selected Jesse Jackson as his replacement. And when asked why they selected Jesse Jackson as his replacement, they said, quote, because he posed no intellectual threat to us, end quote. So this is James Earl Ray. I don't know anything about where that guy was on the day of, but I did hear an eyewitness testimony of a local restaurant that was just down from the hotel where he is shot on the balcony. And the owner of the restaurant came in with a rifle bag and tried to stuff it in, you know, the back area of his restaurant. And one of his employees saw it. And I'm not sure they said anything to him, but they he went around the front. Of course, he's really excited because he just killed potentially MLK. And he maybe wants to get out of that area. I don't know. But someone said they inspected the bag, had a rifle in it, and it was warm. So don't know if that's true. Definitely heard that. And again, it's almost impossible to confirm anything these days because they have descended upon the information and come up with all the backstories of why this couldn't have happened. It's all conspiracy, blah, blah, blah. Doesn't really matter who did it other than James Earl Ray most likely didn't do it. And so this guy goes to jail for something he didn't do. And again, the Martin Luther King's family tried to get him released because they said he didn't kill our father. And they wouldn't release him. Because to release him is to admit someone else killed him. And now we got to reopen the investigation. And you might find things because they don't have everything covered up. I would imagine they got it all covered up, but whatever. They wouldn't let the guy go. That's in April 4th, I believe. In June of the same year, 1968. Sorry, I forgot to mention the year. And, you know, let's take a step back for just one second. What has America turned into at this point in the 60s? Killing is exactly how you get done what you need done. Anyone rises up against you, you kill them. But what would be the catalyst to that authorization of such an amazing event? When you kill a famous person, my God, you've got thousands, if not multiple millions of people who love these individuals. And you're talking about a war. You know, depending on how the people feel about it. 1959, they charged RFK with getting rid of the mob. It's their play of control. They've incubated from 1913 all the way up to 59. They formed this Central Intelligence Agency. Hoover's completely fucking out of control. And so the whole thing's moving up for a clandestine takeover of this country at a apocalyptic level of consciousness. We're going to change you. You're going to obey, and you're going to take all this change that we need to undo this American idea called freedom and the Republic. So RFK's assassination comes with massive details. I assure you, by no exaggeration, that Sirhan Sirhan had nothing to do with Robert Kennedy's death, other than he was forced into the room while the rent-a-cop behind RFK shot him 3 inches from the underside of his right ear. But what's going on? Robert Kennedy does a little stomp. It's super successful. This hotel he's in is utterly packed with fans. The manager of the hotel, I believe, is an ex-World War II vet. Big guy. Big as LBJ. He's seen battle. He's seen war. And he ain't afraid of anybody. He is ushering RFK from the front area, wherever they did this ballroom thing, through the back kitchen. Unfortunately, the Secret Service wasn't as refined as they are today and allowed there to be like an infinite number of people in this room. Unbeknownst to anyone but the people who were in on it, a black car pulls up outside the hotel and a little tiny two-step fire escape that goes into the kitchen of this room where he's killed. A woman in a white polka dotted dress, so it's a black dress with white polka dots, is holding Sirhan Sirhan's hand. Sirhan is, I don't mean to insult the guy, I mean to defend him by this. For all intents and purposes, he's probably around an 85 IQ guy, which means he's very peaceful and not aggressive. He's very docile. He lives with his mother. He takes care of his mother. He is the only one who's bringing any money home to his mother. So getting involved with something nefarious would be the last thing on this guy's mind. Somehow this guy got MK Ultra'd. Okay. I did skip over the killing of Lee Harvey Oswald. I will get back to that because I like to tell it after the Sirhan breakdown because there's a correlation. The woman is dragging him by the hand. He does have a pistol on him. So the chronology is, and the physical location of people are the following. Let's take a long room. I don't know how long this room is, but let's say it's 50, 60 feet long, probably about 30 feet wide, somewhere in that realm. maybe 15 to 20 feet wide. It has all these, you know, stainless steel counters, which you use to prepare food because it's a hotel. Ovens are against the walls, right? Well, facing down the, if you just picture yourself facing down the room from the middle midpoint of the back wall over to your right, about halfway down is the doorway to that fire escape. So here comes the chick with Sirhan. Sirhan. Now, what's going on with RFK is he's having his left hand held by this big fucking mountain of a man, the manager of this hotel, wearing a big suit. He's ushering RFK into the room, and he's so gigantic, he's literally clearing the way as he goes. The woman pushes Sirhan in front of him, or in front of her, excuse me. Now he is in front of this mountain of a man. He's got this pea shooter with him. It's very, very specific, this gun. Because the guy behind RFK, who's a rent-a-cop, who hates the Kennedys with all of his passion, has got the same model gun. And we'll get to him in a second. But Sirhan is being told some key phrase from the polka-dotted woman, which is his control phrase from his Manchurian candidate programming of this MKUltra thing. Now, remember, MKUltra shut down in the early 60s. The United States government actually paid restitution to people that suffered from it. So it's an extremely real clandestine thing. I've got a whole episode on it. As I rearrange my heater here, it's like 50 degrees out here. So Sirhan starts firing this weapon. He is totally out of it. He isn't just pointing it at someone's face and trying to shoot it. He's kind of shooting it and kind of in the air because he doesn't have a true instinct to kill anybody. It's not his nature. Well, within a second, this mountain of a man who has seen war grabs this guy's hand, his wrist, and is slamming his wrist against this aluminum table in front of him, or steel table, whatever, stainless steel table, and the shots are all going to the ceiling. He knocks the gun out of his hand. And then he feels RFK go limp in his left hand. RFK's hitting the ground. Can't hear the individual shot because this cop, this pussy, is shooting him behind his head at the same time Sirhan's shooting. So it all blends together. And when something chaotic happens, no one can track what's going on, because as soon as the first shots start happening, everyone goes down for cover. No one's looking up. And so this guy goes, boom. He shot JFK so close to his head, the cop, the rent-a-cop, not necessarily a police officer, okay? Let's get that straight. That there's burn marks, there's barrel burn marks on RFK's skin. Sirhan's hauled off as the killer of RFK while this cop walks. Kennedy doesn't die immediately. He sits on the floor bleeding out. He gets a couple last words with someone. Can't remember what he said, but he's out of it. And then he dies. Now, Sirhan is taken to the police station and in jail before he's, you know, fully sentenced and sent to prison. They interview the guy. And if you listen to the interview, it's amazing. You hear this little tiny voice, man, this really soft mannered guy. And he said that he was sort of in a dream state, and then he woke up, but someone had told him that he had killed Robert F. Kennedy. And he couldn't understand. He had nothing against RFK, he had no political views whatsoever. He goes to work, makes money, and brings it home to his mother. And somehow they got a hold of this guy, and that was the end of his life. I believe he's still in prison right now. Now, this video that was on Alex Jones' site shows an interview with this cop because he was fully accused of killing RFK. People figured it out. They even tracked the fact that he owned the gun that matched Sirhan's gun. He's sitting on a picnic table in the middle of summer and he is playing like he didn't do anything. They asked him, well, where'd you get the gun? He said, I bought it from a farmer 2 weeks before the assassination. Well, what did you do with the gun? Oh, I gave it back to him. Well, who's this farmer? I don't know, some guy. Lie, lie, lie. Did you kill RFK? Absolutely not. Da, 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 da. They waited till the end of the interview and they asked him, well, what do you think about the Kennedys? And he goes, oh, I fucking hate him. Blah, blah, blah. They're the worst people in the world. So let's take that guy's testimony and let's take Sirhan's Manchurian candidate programming and let's go back to Jack Ruby. Jack Ruby was a tits and ass guy for LBJ and all of his buddies, aka the White Knights. He ran, I think he owned at least three nightclubs in Dallas, right? It is said that on his walls of his establishment, he always had a lot of anti-JFK stuff. He didn't like the Kennedys at all. But there's an interview with that guy at the hospital after he turns into the whatever, the police station where they were going to be transferring Lee Harvey Oswald, where he gets the gut shot and kills him. Remember, Lee Harvey Oswald always told you he was the patsy. He was right. He's supposedly, by the way, downstairs working a vending machine at the exact time of the shooting of JFK. This is Lee Harvey Oswald. Knowing that he's going to be framed, maybe because he took $5,000, I don't know. Maybe he had to take the $5,000 simply to play along because he had played like he hated America, hated the Kennedys, and that's how he bowled himself into these training camps for the Bay of Pigs invasion. He runs down, jumps in a theater, trying to stay out of harm's way. He's watching a movie. Of course, they know where he is because they have had eyes on the guy the whole time. Don't lose track of this dude. He's our guy. And then poof, he gets picked up and Jack Ruby shoots him. But when Jack Ruby's interviewed in the hospital, what I want you to do is take Sirhan Sirhan's interview, first interview after the killing, and what he said about being sort of in a dream state and waking up, having shot supposedly RFK and his, he doesn't know. And Jack Ruby's testimony, because Jack Ruby said, I was driving down the street and all of a sudden I just felt the need to pull in here and do this. And he felt like it was a dream state thing. I don't know if Jack Ruby could be Manchurian candidate. I don't know. But he played this story in 63. And Sirhan didn't have to tell the truth about his experience until 68. Okay. Those are the main guys. What happened after all this, right? Well, marijuana still kind of runs around the world. It doesn't really cause any major problems, so it's not really a target other than to make it illegal such that it sells for a lot of money. What happens in New York City in Studio 54? Cocaine. Cocaine arrives. It's popularized among the elites of New York. Everyone's taking cocaine. It's the pure stuff. It's the expensive stuff. Well, you start watching what happens to these people. Some people can handle it. Some people can't. And they try to push it into the ghettos. And then it's too expensive, so they mix it down to crack. Oh, now it's really cheap. Super destructive. Super addictive. It's ruined life's all over my world at times, right? They got the ghettos down. The ghettos break up into these groups in the 80s where you got gangs now. If you watch documentaries about the Bloods and the Crips and the formation of these two organizations, some of the old school gangsters that survived that era are really trying to tell the story now. That's like, you know, we didn't realize it, but we were kind of created. We were getting this drug supply from God knows where. We didn't grow it. None of us have passports, like Eazy-E said. So someone's bringing it from outside the United States and dropping it on us, and then we sell it. And because it made a ton of money, it's hard to pass that up when you're in a ghetto, man. But the destruction was sort of a bubble payment at the end, right? People start taking it. A few people lose control, no big deal. Still not destroying your neighborhood and your own mind. And then all of a sudden the bubble bursts. We're on 86, 87, and now we've got communities just under the thumb of drugs. But what was going on around the same time? Well, there's this other drug called heroin, which is an old tried and true drug. And the market demand, they realized, could be very, very high as long as they could get everyone addicted to it. So what do? You give out a few bags for free and then everyone's addicted. And then you start turning up the prices and to the point these people are stealing from everybody else. And it's heroin. heroin production has moved into Afghanistan because, boy, do poppy seeds grow well there, right? In that arid climate. Well, because, you know, Zbigniew Brzezinski dropped into Afghanistan during the Afghan-Russian war and basically indoctrinated them onto this radical form of Muslim Islamic worship and Muslim worship. They knew all the warlords. They knew how to get all this stuff grown. And then, boom, it takes over. The 90s are full of a ton of heroin overdoses, right? Now, of course, we have Janis Joplin and Jim Morrison. I believe he took heroin overdoses, but that was more of an eclectic thing these guys could get a hold of. It's not that any of these drugs were not being taken at all times in history. It's just mass distribution and mass selling changes everything. Why is that, though? This is called killing our heroes. Well, if you got drugs everywhere and all your influencers, your musicians, your actors are all strung out on this stuff, well, then no one has any heroes because everyone could be taken down quickly. Now, the 80s had a lot of benign acting heroes and a lot of benign musical heroes. They weren't necessarily saying anything. I mean, I'm a huge fan of the band Rat. Well, look at any lyrics in a Rat song, as original as their riffs are, as original as their music is, which is more than I can say about any of the other bands in that era. Their lyrics are fun. It's like what you play on your boat in Havasu. It's what you play when you're doing a cross-country trip, you know. It's what you play at a party. Not changing anyone's political views. So everyone's left alone. But you still supply the drugs, right? And there's a few bands that are responsible for getting everyone else killed that are still very popular today. So you get one cool guy taking drugs, boy, everyone follows along. It's really crazy. But then you get into the 90s. And what happens with the 90s? As much as I always tell you the 90s were dark, it's kind of because the truth was coming out. What were some of the bands that we had coming out? You had Public Enemy launches in like 87, 86, 87. Doesn't really get mainstream kind of notoriety across the nation until about 89. You have NWA talking about the ghetto, also telling you to stay off drugs initially. But you have bands like Nirvana. You have Rage Against the Machine. Ooh, why these guys are still alive. Probably is a guarantee they never did drugs in the first place. But everyone's waking up, kind of. It's kind of they're waking up to the consciousness of bullshit in some cases. Now, some of these bands are bullshit to begin with, right? So you have, I don't mean to insult this group whatsoever. You do what you got to do to make money and do what you love. But, you know, I've had someone take me through Pearl Jam's original work before they became this big grunge band. Pearl Jam saw Nirvana, saw the writing on the wall and changed to this really dark thing. But they were doing some pretty poppy stuff before that. Alanis Morissette was dancing in triangles and doing all kinds of pop music before she became real hardcore. And the truth of the matter is they probably found more lyrics and music that were true to themselves. Instead of catering to pop, they got back to this more original, gritty thing. So I respect them for all that stuff. And they definitely, all of them made great music. Don't get me wrong. But who was the biggest 90s band to ever exist? And that was Nirvana with Kurt Cobain, right? Now, there's all kinds of rumors about his death, his ex-wife being probably suspect number one. I don't personally have any evidence. I've heard all kinds of rumors of her lobbying to get, you know, gunmen to kill him and all this other stuff. And then he dies in his living room, supposedly shooting himself in the head with a shotgun. Guess you can't have an influencer living very long, right? Now, I don't know anything about his political views or him personally at all. I definitely enjoy his music, but I think he was really steering towards some much heavier lyrics. You know, Rape Me. It was like a crazy cathartic song where you have lyrics that are just gut-wrenching, but a song that is just amazing, right? And it's just full of talent. You know, Dave Grohl is like, I don't know, man. That dude just, he could take a spoon and a rubber band and make the next top 10 song. I mean, swear to God, that guy is so talented. It's ridiculous. But I saw a documentary that broke down the fact that, and this was not an official documentary, but they broke down his suicide letter. And even, I think Dave Grohl said, you know, look, some of this stuff in his suicide letter was like lyrics that he hadn't used yet that were cut and pasted together. So it was kind of strange that we were seeing things that we had already read before in his suicide letter. And it was lyrical and weird. But the shotgun supposedly that he shot himself with was not, it was so long physically that putting it in his head and then reaching the trigger was actually a very difficult endeavor. But that's not the most incriminating evidence that he was murdered. The most incriminating evidence, and I have checked this with police officers because I write movies with cops in them, was they said that the police officers had already filled out his death certificate, cause of death, and time of death before the coroner arrived. And that's not the way it works, folks. One of the horrific pieces of truth about homicide is that once let's put it this way. I'll give you a reenactment. I just had to do this research for a film of mine. When a person gets mortally wounded but hasn't quite passed away yet, the police officers on the scene can interact with the person, pull out their wallet, figure out who they are, ask them questions, do whatever they got to do. But the second the heart stops and that person is dead, police officers can no longer touch the body. Not even if his ID is like sticking out of a pocket and all they need to know is what's in that ID. It's also really bad that if a person were to die in their front yard, say like in some of these drive-bys we used to have in LA in the 90s, the family members are looking at their family member dead on the ground, but the police officers can't do anything but call the coroner. If on that particular night, the coroners are busy, that body could be there for 8 hours, 12 hours, and they can't touch it while the family observes this and can't move their loved one. They're not allowed to touch the body because it's now criminal evidence. And in California, for at least the last, I think, 20 years, they have to now erect a tent around the body to make sure no one can see it, just to keep the reaction factor down. And so they said, look, it's bad because some of these police officers will have to stand out in the rain. And, you know, never snows here, but, you know, it could be under 38 degrees just sitting there watching the body and they can't do anything about it. So the fact that the police officers filled out all this information about him is very, very suspect and reveals a higher level assassination than just Courtney Love pulling some trick. So in my mind, it's a stretch for her to be a suspect, and it looks like it's way deeper than that. Why? He's an influencer. He wasn't under control. If that dude wanted to write a song about something, everyone's going to buy it. Everyone's going to listen to the lyrics, and that's just too much power. All right. Who else died in the 90s who were influencers? Well, how many of you remember the East Coast, West Coast rap battles? You know, we hate them, they hate us, right? It's always got to be some stupid divide and conquer thing, right? We have Tupac and you have Biggie. Both murdered on the West Coast, technically. Tupac's in Vegas, I believe, right? So Suge Knight's driving the car, drives it in the middle of the intersection. Two cars cut them off. One dude fills up the car with bullets. Tupac's dead. And everybody wants him to be alive. The guy from Jurassic 5 keeps getting pinned down as being Tupac. Hey, man, they do look alike. I will say that much. But I don't think Tupac would be down for 25 years of silence, right? He was revealing the weird stuff going on in the music industry. He was revealing, and honestly, what I'm about to say isn't against the law. It's not... you know, we shouldn't have any necessarily negative feelings about it necessarily. It's these people's choices to live this way. But he was revealing a lot of homosexuality in the music industry. He was on tape being recorded. And you can hear this out there saying that Quincy Jones approached him for some things. Never occurred, but he approached it. And Dr. Dre has a side hobby, it appeared. At least in the 90s he did. And he was very frustrated because he was like, I just want to make music. And these guys always want to have sex. And it's like, I don't have anything to do with that. And there's a bunch of that in the music industry, and they call it the gravy thing. And it's they say, you know, anyone says it's how are you doing, and they say, oh, it's all gravy, then they're in that clan. Weird. There's a whole set of documentaries about these rappers interviewing each other on telephones and talking about all the weird shenanigans that occurred. A lot of folks that are perceived as being ladies' men and being very straight are actually not that in real life. So, okay, it's their choice why they're hiding. It's just because their image would disappear, right? Tough gangster is not, it doesn't mean they're not a gangster. It just means they're doing this other stuff on the side. Again, they're not breaking the law necessarily unless they're on Epstein's plane, right? There's probably a reason why the woman with Prince Andrew on Epstein Island was also photographed with Bill Clinton and rapper Eminem, who has been totally a Trump hater, man. And now he's trying to get rid of the Second Amendment. They're leaning on him. They're leaning on him hard, man. And he is caving like crazy. But Tupac was, I think at this point, most likely murdered by a LA cop who was extremely corrupt, who was then convicted of a murder 6 months later. And now I think he's been in jail forever. I think he may be dead now or something. Not quite sure. The other one is Biggie. The Biggie death is probably one of the most overlooked, bizarre deaths of any kind. I think he was murdered on Wilshire Boulevard. When I ran my startup for the LED theater replacement with all the 3D stuff in it, we were underneath this big effects house called the Third Floor downtown, right across from SAG, literally right across the street from SAG, which is the acting guild. And he was about a block down to the west in front of the Peterson Car Museum. I don't know why he was there, but witnesses said that, I think he's shot, right? But witnesses said that the CIA was all over the place. Earbuds are all over the neighbor, all over that district right down there when he got shot. It's sort of cleaning up this mess, this West Coast, East Coast thing. After those two guys are dead, it's over. It's over. The rap industry took a big hit. It kind of wandered around for a little while and then finally got back on its feet. But there was no more talk of that West Coast, East Coast crap. But how many people in New York saw Biggie as a hero? Go look up Biggie graffiti. His face is probably one of the most painted faces on the side of buildings all over New York that you've ever seen in your life. Tupac? Well, one, he was a genius. He was a prodigy kid pretending to be a gangster. He liked his weed. He showed up on Arsenio, baked out of his mind a couple times. He was enjoying his brilliance, and he was one of the finest rappers that will ever live. Both of them. Both of them were phenomenal. I don't care if you don't like rap. You just listen to a couple of their songs and you'd be like, damn. Go look at Biggie's street performances where he ad-libbed and did rap battles with guys. I mean, it's just insane how good this guy was. But why do we have people who think these people are still alive? Because they were heroes. Right? You know, I glossed over, completely skipped like Elvis's death. Elvis's death, because I'm 50, has a very interesting spot in my life because I wasn't alive when JFK died, right? But my father and I, I'll just tell you the story. I think I told it once before. My father was a massive Elvis fan. Because he's a clean-cut guy. He's a nice guy. He used to give away his money. He was just really an amazing guy. I mean, he didn't have any super nefarious things. I think his wife, Priscilla, knew that he was doing things on the side. Not even sure how far that went, right? But of course, he gets hooked on a ton of drugs. They get him on a drug that was supposed to be fighting cancer or something and made him really obese towards the end of his life. But he is utterly controlled. I forgot what the guy is who's sort of his little controller on the side, but he had one. He's surrounded by a bunch of yes men who have all regretted the fact that they were yes men because they probably should have stepped in. Some of them were pretty honest about the fact that even if they had said something at the later stages, he probably would have just thrown them out of the clan. So everybody didn't want to lose Elvis from their circle They didn't want to be kicked out and ostracized, so they went along with it. But my dad had a photography. He's a professional photographer throughout my childhood, and he had his own studio in a town that was 27 miles away from our hometown, which in the Midwest is considered a really long distance. But I was with him, and I never remembered why. I just go with my dad, and he'd give me money to go to the movies next door for $3.75. And then one block over, I go to Perry's, which has since burned down because the restaurant next to them caught on fire and burned them down. The best chocolate pie you've ever had in your life. I've never eaten one slice of chocolate pie that remotely touches Perry's chocolate pie. It was like thick, nice filling, you know? But anyway, that would be my day. And then we left and it was dark out and we're getting into the car. And we get in the car, my dad turns on the stereo. This is before cell phones. This is before, you know, everyone having a TV in every single room and all that stuff. And they announced that Elvis Presley had died. And my father just said, "What?" And cranked the radio up. And it was the weirdest ride home. And now that I look back at it, you know, let's see. I guess my dad was about 33 years old when that happened. Having experienced Prince's untimely death, you know, I know what he feels like now. And I'm sure his heart just got absolutely destroyed. But Elvis was a hero. Complete hero. Now, Elvis didn't have any big political views or anything. So he most likely did himself in pretty much the way history says. No, necessarily. I don't know. Maybe you guys know more about some conspiracy around him. I've never heard of anything. But who is another person that we keep saying that, you know, they say there's a groundskeeper in his home in Memphis that is him, a really old man. So, you know, I don't know. I hope he's still alive, but I doubt he is. John Lennon's murdered. Talk about a hero. I've got friends in LA who are in their late 60s who consider him to be their hero. John Lennon, again, I never knew this until, God, probably 15 years ago, that his whole last couple of years, he was doing interviews on the sidewalk in New York, just calling out the CIA and saying that we're going to get rid of them. We're going to destroy them. They're destroying the world. They're starting all the wars. And it was like, whoa, how did this guy get all awake? But he's murdered. What was it? The tail end of 1980? By a guy that said he was killing John Lennon to impress a girlfriend. He used his payphone, walked over and shot him at the hotel that he lived in, which I think he owned too, but whatever. He owns the top floor where Yoko still lives to this day. He's mowed down. Hero gone. Conflict with the intelligence agency gone. And you might think, well, that's just a big stretch. You know, he just was mad or whatever. Well, okay. So less than 4 months later, the same exact story is used with Hinckley. Hinckley's trying to impress Jodie Foster, right? So he takes a shot at Reagan. Reagan, who had just investigated the Federal Reserve and Fort Knox, trying to find out how much money do we have in Fort Knox? And two, when's the last time we paid any principal on our debt to the bankers? And he had these guys off doing the investigation. And supposedly when they came back to him, they said, look, we probably haven't paid any principal past 1952. So he wanted to change things. So they sent him a warning shot. Now, whether or not he's actually shot or not, I contest that he may not have been shot. But the gun goes off and he learns who's actually the president. And that would be George Walker Bush was the president. So when I see these assassination stories, they are definitely fascinating. But what really matters to me is what could happen today. You have people like Nancy Pelosi, who is saying right now, she said in the last 7 days, that Trump will not be president in 2020, no matter what. She has handed out pins when she signed this impeachment articles and wasted, I don't know how much money, 30 pins at probably $500 to $1,000 a pin with little bullets on them. She wears a bracelet with bullets on. She keeps sending off all these signals like, we're ready. Whenever you want to kill him, we're ready. But now, let's think about this from a more macro perspective. every single grave of a soldier since the beginning of this country fought for at least one thing, and that was to protect the vote. And now we have a House leader who doesn't care anymore. Her whole administration is full of people that don't care anymore. Nadler doesn't care. Schumer doesn't care. Schiff doesn't care. And so these individuals are now right in your face. In a movie about this, maybe 50 years ago, they would have been those, it would have been a ground invasion, amphibious invasion, a parachute invasion of people with guns and bayonets trying to kill us all. They don't play it like that anymore. It's all intellectual. So we now have allowed in through voter fraud because we don't have a voter ID, because the voting machines are all owned by criminals, some of them ex-felons of voter fraud. Again, I had communicated to me that the first founders of Diebold were ex-voter fraud felons. Well, they found a really great side job they know all about. The gentleman that stood up in Florida and said, I am a programmer for the voting machines that Jeb Bush and that senator bought, and I literally was told to program the votes to switch from one person to the other. And of course, he says it in public. A bunch of shills on the other side say, no, we don't care, and nothing happens, right? We feel like this is all behind us. This will not happen again. We've got a much better Secret Service. If you're a Q follower, you believe the military itself, with the cooperation of good factions and all those agencies I just mentioned, are now filtering information and watching the people that orchestrate these events closely, making sure that if any command is given, even in code, that they find out and they protect the president. I will tell you that there have been at least one true assassination attempt on President Trump when he was at a golf course in Scotland, his golf course. A guy paratrooped in and took out one Secret Service guy. One guy has already given his life for the president. That is huge. We had that Chinese lady trying to infiltrate the resort with all that crazy spy shit in her purse. They're playing for keeps, man. Now, by the president playing tough and by the Secret Service playing wimpy, we now have more instances of threats to the president than we can keep track of. All of these people have gone without any prison sentence and without any slaps on the hand. The press hasn't covered anything. And if you believe Fox is totally on your side, well, then you should have heard about all this stuff I just told you that happened recently. And now they try to hide behind paradigms, right? Now, I have a lot of experience with comedians in Los Angeles. I used to help dozens of them in Los Angeles do their thing from 2003 to probably about 2015. I still have a couple clients. And what they want to say is, if a comedian goes on stage and jokes about killing the president, then he or she is protected by the fact that they're comedians. Oh, is that really funny? All right, let's change the script a little bit and see if it still pans out. Let's have some German comedian, which is already an oxymoron itself. Let's have a German comedian go up and make a bunch of jokes about Auschwitz, about all the Holocaust stuff, about killing Jews and tattooing them and putting stars on them and throwing them in trains. Let's make a bunch of jokes about that and see how long that guy has a career. It'd probably be the last performance they'd ever have. They did in Europe. They'd probably be arrested. So we can't allow them to smuggle through, bizarre, Snoop Dogg did the video where he did the gun that puts out the flag and says bang, but it's a guy standing there looking like Trump. Yeah, it's hilarious, man. It's just so hilarious, isn't it? What's interesting is, if you write scripts about investigations, there's always that map of co-conspirators, aiding and abettors, people that provide more motive. And if you think about the Charles Manson murders, let's think about it. Charles Manson was put in prison for life for simply influencing people, supposedly, no proof, but influencing these people to go kill these people. Let's say it's totally true. Okay. Well, then what if whoever takes that shot at Trump and succeeds simply says, well, I did it because Kathy Griffin influenced me. Madonna influenced me. Snoop Dogg influenced me. Whoopi Goldberg influenced me. The whole View influenced me. Nancy Pelosi influenced me. Well, what's going to happen with all those people? And I'm going to tell you what's going to happen to those people. Nothing. Nothing. Because the fiber of these agencies that are supposed to protect against this stuff, they've all turned into giant pussies. And if you're fucking listening to me, I'm calling you a pussy. Get out there and do your goddamn job. Because we don't need that kind of disruption. And don't lecture me about how you have control over everything. You don't. Because as long as they keep coming to the battle, okay, they're going to take the shot however many times they need to take it. Obviously, it's never happened, and I hope it never, ever happens. I mean, that's my point of this episode. We have to protect anyone we admire in this world. Hopefully, we make good choices, and we don't let actors and musicians tell us how to pick our political party people. You think they have any time to learn anything? What, are you kidding me? You know anything about an actor's life or a musician's life? An active musician who's got to crank out an album every single year, otherwise they get their... They lose their record contract, right? An actor that's got to find a new gig, read a script every single day, get your new lines every day, and these people are got enough time to really get into the nitty gritty. They go to parties. They do things they're not supposed to do. They get photographed. They hang out with spirit cooking women, you know? Meanwhile, they're making a bunch of movies about rape. And then they say, oh, I punched the president in the face. What? I mean, just saying that alone is like, you need a visit, man. You need a visit because you're being a Manson. You can kill someone with an elbow. All right. So say someone, you mean to tell me that like Conor McGregor couldn't kill me with a punch? If I didn't know it was coming, that dude could kill me in a split second with a punch. So if Robert De Niro says a bunch of shit about me and Conor McGregor believes it and he fucking finds me where I'm not looking and pow, y'all, if I am looking, he ain't going to help, right? He could kill me. But now you got to go arrest De Niro because he influenced McGregor, right? I love McGregor. Nothing against that guy. De Niro, he can go fuck himself. But anyway, I hope this was useful. I hope you update your view of the world as a massive agenda pool. And a lot of us want to believe that certain people have been taken out. Again, no one's seen George Soros alive since October of 2018. No one has seen Jacob Rothschild alive since May of 2018. Now, I was hoping they would change their ways so whatever happened to them wouldn't be necessary. But it seems like something happened to them. Don't know. George Soros may have died in an accident. The compound of the Rothschilds was definitely being raided at the time that a plane crashed, and they haven't seen him since. And Jacob was doing lots of interviews at the time. Maybe you've seen him do something live. I don't know. But in my smoke lounge, we watch gigabytes of hours and hours of footage, and we haven't seen these two guys live. There's lots of articles written about what they're doing, at least George Soros. He's in news articles all the time. But his son is now showing up to these conventions, these G8s and G20s and all this other stuff. And George isn't there, but George was always there before. So maybe you've seen him alive. I haven't seen him alive. Throw me something if you got something. But anyway, hope you feel me on that. Let me know what you think about all this stuff and correct any of the stuff that you think I got wrong. Point me in directions of documentaries that you think are very credible. And we'll just maybe revisit this at a future time, or at least if I drop little tidbits in other episodes, I will do any errata corrections stuff that I need to do. I think for most of these situations, we simply don't know, but we're just trying to piece it together, right? Anyway, if you haven't gone to deepthoughtsradio.com, please go. That's where everything is. And again, if anything were to happen to the channel for any reason, go there, bookmark it, forget about it. And then if you can't find it, go there, and I will definitely provide alternatives to getting the episodes. But on the video realm, we've got YouTube. They've been really good to us. I mean, seriously, they demonetize most videos because of either my language is really bad. Sometimes I'll just take the hit. Other times it's the title of the video that just has, this video may be demonetized because I'm going to put killing in its title. So it may be because this information is really hot. It may just because the title is a keyword that they don't want associated with an ad person. Just keep that in mind. It's not everything is so heavy handed, right? But we're also on BitChute, and BitChute is a freedom of speech zone. Everything goes out there. It's 1080p, not 4K, but who cares? It's just my voice, whatever. Now, the other one we're slowly moving on is Brighteon. It's not on the website because I only have 49 episodes up there. At this stage, we're 330 views away from our next 50. So if you do want to go up there and just click on videos and watch them, you know, for 2 seconds and then get my video count view up, then we'll get to the next 50. And then I think it'll start organically taking off because the next 50 in the first season are a lot more popular than the first 50, which were more me trying to pass you the DNA that made my life better, right? On the podcast side, plenty of links. Definitely consider not using iTunes as your podcast listener if you desire to go back to the first season on your podcast or podcast software, because they only, like, they have a 350 limit. So go find Podcast Addict. I don't know if that's on the Apple platform, but it is the best one on the Android platform by far. It's just, they update it all the time. They make it better, but it allows you to download it while you're at your home, and then you can get on your car and you don't pay any bandwidth to listen to anything. So it's beautiful. On the social media side, we have a locked Facebook group with some of the greatest people on planet Earth. We have Twitter, which is also taking off, and Minds.com. Minds.com is a copy of Facebook, but it's First Amendment protected. It's blockchain based, I believe. And it is, in my opinion, way more beautiful than Facebook. It is currently white. They don't have a dark mode, but hopefully they get that together. But please sign up for BitChute, sign up for Minds.com, because they need your membership to grow, to get financing and all that kind of stuff. So that's good. There's really only two ways to donate to the page, and there's two products I recommend. I tried to do the affiliate link thing, make no money from this stuff, so please take that into effect. But there's PayPal for one-time donations. There's been a few of you have done it. Thank you so much. Again, you're totally anonymous to me, so I don't know who you are. On Patreon, it's a monthly thing. What Patreon people get is all the episodes, usually about a day or two before everybody else. Sometimes it's 4 or 5 days before everyone else. But it also gets you a 20% discount on the store. The two products I recommend all the time is the Brave browser. Now, it is based on Chromium kernel, which is the layout kernel, but they don't track. There's no callbacks to Google within the kernel. So you're really well protected, blocks all the trackers, which, and all the movies that autoplay and stuff. So it is extremely fast. In fact, I don't think I'm able to even see a movie on Twitter. So if I'm looking at a news article and they say, hey, push this button to see it, I can't get it to view. I have to click over to Twitter to get it to play. That's how much they protect you. Because they knock off all this extra traffic, which is 50 to 60% of the traffic. If you go to any one of your favorite news sites, it's way faster. And they keep track of all the minutes and seconds that they say, which is really cool. Change your search engine from Google to DuckDuckGo, and you'll totally poke out the eye of the deep state. And you'll also remove analytics that they can sell to someone else. So you really just nail them. It's great. The other one is, if you need any online backup, backblaze.com, $8, one computer, infinite storage. I have one account now, 16 gigabytes of stuff out there, or excuse me, terabytes of stuff on the cloud. It's great. It's beautiful. We have the store. Store has two new designs for season 5. The season 3 was pulled. Season 4 never had one. But again, there's a 20% discount on Patreon if you need it. I picked really, really thick shirts too. So you're not going to get one of these shirts you can see through. So you know me, I wear the same stuff all the time. I like the last, I have my smoking stuff. So that's why you see a lot of my clothes over and over and over again over 5 years, because these are the jackets that I hang up that are just all smoky. I take my other jackets out for dinner. You won't see any season 1 on this channel because I've remastered them all. Balanced the audio, took out all the custom music, which the music industry was doing to screw me over, but there was a lot of censorship. So it's all off on its own channel, no ads whatsoever. You can also find them all on BitChute in case you just want to give them the traffic. But what's amazing is that the most popular videos on BitChute are almost the opposite of the most popular videos on YouTube, which I find utterly amazing. So, I mean, you know, my video on ego which is a real esoteric thing about, you know, checking yourself. It's like third in line. Almost nobody ever watched it on YouTube. It's hilarious, right? So that's pretty cool. But anyway, take care of yourself and someone else, and I will see you in the next Deep Thoughts. Over now.